Well, he had it in front of him too, but that's okay. But yes, we are continuing our series tonight in discouragement. For those of you who were here last week, or hopefully you caught the live stream, if you weren't, the recording or whatever afterwards. But last week when we looked at discouragement, we looked at powerful feelings. So things that by emotion drive us to a point of discouragement. And so the two characters we looked at last week, we looked at Jonah and we looked at his anger. And we looked at Asaph and we looked at his covetousness, jealousy, and discontent. So those powerful feelings. This week, we want to at least start into a topic of worldly culture and satanic suggestions. In case you're wondering, those labels aren't original with me. We mentioned it last week, but if you go back to March 14th of 21, Pastor did a message on that Sunday morning, and that's where I'm stealing these labels from, at least. At least I gave credit, okay? I didn't just steal them. But yeah, so that's where those come from. So we're looking at right now the second and third that we're going to consider of those. But to do that, really, there we go. Hey, it's working tonight. It's such a blessing. So worldly culture and satanic suggestions, and we're going to be looking at Nehemiah. So we're going to start looking through the book of Nehemiah. So if you want to turn there with me, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms. So go to Psalms and flip back a few pages. We want to consider Nehemiah. And Nehemiah, he returns to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And there's several things in the account of Nehemiah, several different times where there's something that would easily could or did discourage him, and then he responded. So we're going to kind of take a survey look through at those times. So we're going to start in chapter 1. We start with the chapter 1, verse 1. The words of Nehemiah, the son of, I knew I was going to match, Hakaliah. That's what I'm going to go with, Hakaliah. And it came to pass in the month of Chislu, in the 12th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. So as Nehemiah starts the book here, he's giving us a little bit of background context. So he's in Assyria. We'll get to what he's doing later, because that becomes important. But he's in Assyria, and there are Jews who have returned to Jerusalem, to Judah, and now one of those, his brother, and some of his compatriots, buddies, whatever, have come back, and they are now giving a report to Nehemiah. This is where we'll see the project identified. So chapter 1, and I am sorry that is so small on that screen. We'll get it hopefully bigger for next week. But that's the project identified in chapter 1. So he gets that report. He's just asked them. That's where we're at in verse 2. And what they come back and give him is the disheartening report. They give him a disheartening report. Verse 3, and they, those are the guys who had returned from Judah, from Jerusalem, said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. So the people were afflicted. There was outside forces working on the people there, keeping them down and discouraged. They were being attacked. They were under the thumb of all the people around them. We'll see that as we go down through, as because they try to continue that approach as Nehemiah actually goes to Jerusalem. But they've tried to get them under their thumb. So they're afflicted. But not only are they afflicted, The word he uses here is reproach. That reproach. They had turned their back on God. They were no longer serving God, which is what got them in the mess to begin with. We don't have time to go into the whole history of it, but this was when Jerusalem had been destroyed by the Assyrians, and they had been under the captivity of the Babylonians, and all that whole history has gotten them to this point. They got to there because they stopped serving God. And they're still continuing in that in the city. So they're under affliction, they're under reproach. But then to cap it off, he finishes the description there in the end of verse 3, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. The city was just destroyed. There was nothing left of it. There was no walls, there was nothing. It became a defenseless place. Kind of sit in Nehemiah's position here. He's been taken away from his home. He's in captivity. And now he finds out that the reason he's in captivity, the people are still doing. They're still sinning. He's found out that they're still under oppression from all the people around them, and that the city is just in shambles. Not exactly a piece of news you want. So we see the source there, the disheartening report, but then we see his solution, the faith-filled response. His solution is the faith-filled response, starting in verse 4. And it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. His response, well, yes, he was heartbroken over it. He turned to God. And as we finish out chapter 1, through the end of chapter 1, we have a prayer here that Nehemiah prays. So he has got this really discouraging news, and he's, okay, how am I going to deal with this? Let me stop, let me pray, let me fast, let me take time to seek God, let me get God's mind on the matter. Nothing in his own strength. Nothing in whatever he can do. He turns to God. And then we see in his prayer a pattern, something for us to follow as we face situations. The first thing is, remember we talked about they're under reproach. They've rejected God. The first thing he does is in verse 5, and I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God, that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. The first thing he does is he acknowledges who God is. It's like, you are this great God. So he acknowledges the acknowledgement of God. But then in verses 6 and 7, he confesses the sin. Verse 6, let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night, for the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. He's not just saying they have sinned, we have sinned. As a nation, we turned our back on you. He goes on in verse 7, we have dealt very corruptly against thee and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments which thou commandest thy servant Moses. He calls the sin what it is. They had very clear commands from Moses what they were supposed to do as a people, and they chose not to do it. And they are facing God's judgment for that. So he confesses the sin, and then he makes a plea for help. Verse 8, "Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying, If ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations." You can almost hear him in the background saying, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. You scattered us. That's why I'm in Assyria. That's why I'm here in the palace in Shushan, is because you scattered us. You kept your word. But, I always like the word "but" when I'm reading through a passage. It's a lot of fun. "But if you turn unto me and keep my commandments and do them, though there were of you cast out to the uttermost part of the heaven, yet will I gather them from thence and will bring them unto the place that I have chosen to set my name there." He says, God, you said, not what I think, not what I wish you would do. No, this is what you said. If we don't follow your commands, you're going to scatter us all over the place. But if we confess, if we get it right, if we seek to follow you, you'll let us come back. So he makes this plea for help. "Now these are thy servants and thy people, whom thou hast redeemed by thy great power and by thy strong hand." And then verse 11, he makes a request for an opportunity. "O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, and to the prayer of thy servants who desire to fear thy name, and prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man." Who's that man? Well, "for I was the king's cupbearer." That would be King Artaxerxes, the ruler of the Assyrian Empire. So the pattern we have here is he recognizes who God is. He starts the prayer off by acknowledging who God is. He then confesses the sin of himself, but also the people as a whole. He makes a plea, and that plea is a repetition of what God has promised. He's prayed back God's words to him. And he says, "Because of all of that, would you show me mercy and give me an audience with my boss, the king?" It leads us to an application for this one. Oftentimes we look at the size of the project, in this case a project, restoring the city, rather than the size of our God. Nehemiah was focused on who God was. Yes, that was a daunting task to even think about trying to repair the city of Jerusalem. That was something that would be beyond the scope of what I didn't want to consider trying to tackle. And on top of that, he's dealing with all the people. Remember, they're afflicted. They're under the oppression of all their neighbors. So it's not just the construction aspect, but you've got the governance aspect of it. This is a massive project. But he's not focused on that. He's focused on the fact that God's promised to bring the children of Israel back together if they are right with him. How many times do we get that piece of discouraging news? Sitting down in a doctor's office. The phone call in the middle of the night. How do we respond to that? Those are big problems. But we have a big God. We have a God who's bigger than that problem. So that's our first lesson here being in the project is we have a God who's bigger than the problem. But then he continues on. And in chapter 2, we see the project announced. In verses 1 through 10, there's an open door. I'm not going to take time to read all the way down through those, but he walks in to the cup as the cupbearer to the king. In a lot of instances, the king's life was in the hands of the cupbearer. By this point, he was a very trusted, very honored man in the court of Artaxerxes. In verse 2, "Wherefore the king said unto me, Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick?" At least, you can almost hear in the undertones of that, "You're not sick, are you?" The king looking at his cupbearer, really hoping he's not sick. This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. And now Nehemiah has a decision to make. And you can see his response here. "Then I was very sore afraid." I can only imagine. Because Artaxerxes, with just basically not even a lift of a finger, and Nehemiah is a dead man. And his response, "And he said unto the king, Let the king live forever. Why should not thy countenance be sad? When the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire." The king looks at him and goes, "Well, okay, that's nice. What do you want me to do about it?" Verse 4, "Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request?" Just a reminder before I read the next phrase in that verse, he's just spent several days fasting and praying. The king looks at him and says, "Hey, you don't look too good. What's wrong?" And he looks at the king and says, "Well, the city of my fathers, where my fathers are buried, it's in shambles, the walls are burned, it's destroyed. How can I be happy when that's going on in my home?" And the king goes, "Okay, so what should I do about it? What do you want from me? What can I do to solve this?" And then you see his response right there. "So I prayed to the God of heaven." Relatively confident this was not a 20-minute on my knees prayer closet. "I'm going to take a whole long time and have a long discussion with God." No, I'm guessing, and I'm just surmising here. Well, I've talked about it before, but you have to read with your imagination. Think about Nehemiah here. He doesn't have very long. So I'm thinking to myself, if I was in that situation, what am I going to think? Because I'm not going to say it out loud because that's going to sound really weird. Now I just really think we're going to be in trouble. So I'm not going to say it out loud, but what am I thinking? Well, I'm thinking, first of all, "Lord, thank you for answering my prayer. I just asked you to give me an opportunity to talk to the king, and you've answered that prayer. Second, help me to say what I'm supposed to." And I'm guessing it took all of about that long. And so his answer to him, "And I said to the king, If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchre, that I might build it." And he goes on asking for some specific things, and that's granted to him. An open door is put before him. And this leads us into, as we get into verse 11, the overwhelming project. Verse 11, so I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And I rose in the night, I and some of the men with me, neither told I any man what God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. And I went out by night, as in verse 13 and verse 14, then I went on the gate of the fountain into the king's pool, but there was no place for it. It's hard to imagine this. And unfortunately, I couldn't get some good pictures of it to kind of demonstrate where this stuff is at. But he takes a circuit around the city of Jerusalem. Well, he goes as far as he can because some of the stuff is so in shambles, so destroyed, so much rubble, he can't even get around it. So he examines the work and he gets down through verse 16. And the rulers knew not whether I went or what I did. He's like, okay, I'm not telling anybody about this. I'm going to go out by night. I'm not even going to take an animal with me. I'm going to go look at what the city looks like. I need to know what I'm getting into. So then in verse 17, he calls those religious leaders, the Jewish leaders, to action. And then I said unto them, that would be the Jewish leaders, ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. It's like, guys, we got to get to work. Verse 18, we see our solution. In case you didn't catch it, you can see it in your notes there, but each of these times we look at, there's a source of discouragement, and then we see Nehemiah's solution to it. So in this case, our source was that overwhelming project. Well, his solution was, get to work. Verse 18, then I told them of the hand of my God, which is good upon me. Yes, he told them, we need to get to work, but it's not really we need to get to work. It's we need to do what God's enabled us to do. As also the king's words that he has had spoken unto me, and they said, let us rise up and build. They needed a leader. So they strengthen their hands for this good work. When they had a man who had prayed, had seen God's answer to prayer, had seen God's provision, you've got the all the supplies have come with them. He and the whole entourage have traveled this way under guard from the King Artaxerxes with all the stuff they need, and basically letters that said, hey, if you mess with him, you're messing with me, and so leave him alone. That encouraged the people to get to the work. He encouraged the leaders, which encouraged the people. So then we're going to also see, now that he has encouraged the people to get to work and they start doing it, we're going to see mockery part one. And that's because we see this come up again in a little bit, and we'll get to that hopefully. Hopefully we'll get to that. So we see mockery part one in chapter 2, verse 19. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant the Ammonite and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, what is this thing that you do? Will ye rebel against the king? You have to say it with a snarl in your voice. It just doesn't work otherwise. Going back to read with your imagination. They mocked him. They said, you're not going to do this. You can't do this. There's no way the king is going to let you do this. You're rebelling against it. No, there's no way. What are you doing? And you see his response. First of all, the scorn of the wicked there in the first half of the verse. We'll get those notes up there for you. And then their false accusations. What do you think you're doing, Nehemiah? But then verse 20, which I don't think is going to be on my slide. Nope. So we're going to have to cover that otherwise. Verse 20, we see the response. There we go. That's why I have it over here highlighted as well, so I can give you your blank. It's not on the slide, sorry. For solution there is the response for verse 20. Then answered I them and said unto them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build. But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. Oh, it is up there. Okay. Got ahead of myself in my notes. There it is. So the first thing we see here in the first half of verse 20 is the Lord to help the builders and give them success and prosper their efforts. The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Not Nehemiah as this great leader, the architect and engineer, the general contractor of the project. Notice his name doesn't exist in this. The God of heaven, he will prosper us. And then the workers were totally committed to the project. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build. We will build it. Not we might, not we can, not we should. We are going to do it. And the opponents had no claim, no share, no authority, no rights. They had nothing in Jerusalem. Remember, we're talking about Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian. All three of these are foreigners to the city of Jerusalem, to Judah as a nation. Though technically, yes, I know they're not a nation at this point, but they still had their God-given area. Okay, these people had no portion of that. They had no business even standing there talking to him. And Nehemiah recognizes that. Not only is God going to help us do this, and we are going to do this, but you guys got to go. There's no point in even talking to you at this point. In our Christian life, there are times when we need to separate. Our application here. When we take a step of faith, often those in the world, and sometimes those not in the world, around us will not understand and will take the opportunity to ridicule us. What is our response to that? Stand up and say, God's told me to do this. And we get to work. We're not mean, we're not ugly, we're not throwing punches, we're not doing any of that stuff. But we're like, look, I'm going to do what God told me to do, so excuse me while I go do what I need to. If you want to talk, there's the wall, enjoy your speech. I'm not listening anymore. Now, caveat that. There's times when we need to listen to wise counsel. Just because we think we're going the right way doesn't mean we should just shut off everybody else and not listen to them. But if we're following God, if we've worked to this point to follow the pattern that Nehemiah has established, we just need to get to work. So So for chapter 3, then, we see the project assigned. And if somebody else would like to, I would be more than happy to let them, but I am not going to try to read through all the names in chapter 3. So we're just going to say that we just want to take one note of one thing in chapter 3, down in verse 5, and next unto them, so there's a whole line of people who've been working on the walls around the city, and next unto them, the Tekoites repaired. Remember that I told you before, the buts are always kind of fun when you read scripture? This is another one of those really kind of fun ones. It kind of points out an interesting facet. But their nobles put not their necks to the work of the Lord. They said, nope, we're not going to do it. That's below us. That's too dirty, too menial. I'm assuming that it's not written in our Bible, but that's just, I mean, that's what it sounds like. It's like, nope, that's too much hard work. I'm not going to do it. Now, they said the people still did it, but it was the nobles. It was the upper class refused to do the job. So it brings us to an application there as well. Keep at the work. Don't worry about what others around you are doing. God gets to determine the outcome, not you. It is rather interesting that the one thing that the nobles of the Tekoites are remembered for is not for the section of wall that they built, not for the gate that they stood up or the locks. If you read through all of chapter 3, which it is interesting reading, just I would not recommend out loud, or let Scorby read the names out loud for you. But either way, it's rather interesting because all of the other individuals, they talk about the sections of wall they repaired. And, I mean, they had some that did the dung gate. They had some that did, I mean, they were all over the place. They're working hard. And the nobles from the Tekoites, what are they remembered for? Sitting back and doing nothing. How's that for a fantastic legacy? Yeah, so what family of Jerusalem are you in? The Tekoites. You can just see that conversation happening. That's what these guys are remembered for. Everyone else has put their neck to the work. They've done the work. And then you have the Tekoites. So again, the application. Do your job. Do what God has called you to do. Trying to see the clock there. I can't see which hand that is. We will try. We will try to jump into chapter 4. We're not going to even come close to finishing chapter 4 tonight. But chapter 4. In chapter 4, we see the project attacked. Hey, I'm taking lessons from Pastor. We got some A alliteration here going. I don't know how much longer we're going to keep it, but we got it for now at least. So the project attacked. I told you before, we had mockery part 1. Well, in chapter 4, we start with mockery part 2. Guess who comes back? But it came to pass when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. So we see the anger of Sanballat. Not only did he do it to Nehemiah and the Jews, but now he's also doing it to, as we read on verse 2, and he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, what do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish which are burned? Now he's got the really big sneer in his voice. Yeah. We want that one. We're not to buy it yet. Sanballat, he ridiculed the workers, the feeble Jews, just frail, miserable, powerless. They can't do anything. These are the guys that are on the wall actually building right now. But they can't do anything. Just ask Sanballat. Ridiculed their hope to protect themselves. Man, that wall's not going to hold up to anything. I could breathe on it and knock it over. And this is, I think, where probably Sanballat, and Sanballat's made a number of mistakes to this point. But this is where I think he kind of kicked the door open without even knowing it. Will they sacrifice? They don't even have a God big enough to help them build that wall, is in essence what he's saying. And they're using junk. These stones have been so hot from the fires, they're all cracked up and broken. The wood's completely destroyed. All the metal's not worth anything. They've got nothing to work with. You can almost hear the fear in his voice that, wait a second, maybe they do have something to work with here, and I'm going to lose the power I have, the prestige I have, the position I have, ruling over them, oppressing them. Going back to what were the brethren seeing? That they were oppressed, they were afflicted. Well, Sanballat's one of the afflictors. And we see him continue that pattern here. Except this time, I'm going to say Nehemiah, but really what I'm saying is God is standing up to him. And with that, I think we're going to leave off. So we got through Sanballat. If we start off next week, we'll start looking at Tobiah and what his mockery was all about here in chapter 4 and how that finishes out. But at this point, we will hand it back over to Pastor and let him do prayer requests and announcements and such.